Brand?
Good evening, Brandy. I hope you're well.
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. But my husband went in the hospital with congestive heart failure.
I'm sorry to hear that. They have stents in already, or they're putting more in?
No, they gave him some type of medication. It regulated it. Now he's in a rehabilitation facility, and they're helping.
Please join me in saying the Anabakora. Anabakora. Gedula Chimina. Alephat Gimel Yutat Sadi. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Aharenu Nora Ufre Shayan Tintet Nun Nagibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kevavat Shamrem Nun Gimel Dalad Yud Kaf Shin. The sequence Yud Kaf Shin allows us to take body parts that need healing and return them to their stem cell state, where they can be cleansed and rejuvenated and healed. And then we can return them back to the body in their pristine state of having been rejuvenated and healed, and allow them to start to function again in their fully healed state. Barchem tacharem rachamei sipkatcha tamlein betet resh. Sadi Taf Gimel. The letters of the month of Av, the Kaf that created the sun, and the Tet that created the constellation Aryeh, the Leo, the lion. The lion has a gematria of 216, which is the same number of letters in the 72 names of God. Chasim Kadosh Berov Tuvcha Na'el Adata Het Kufet Het Dunayan Yachid Geyeh Lamcha Penei Zokre Kiddushatach Yud Gimelamed Hei Zayin Kuf. Shavatenu kabel Ushmatia katenu Yodea Kalumot Shinkufav Sadi Yutah. And we are starting to utilize the Tzirufim from the verse that has the gematria of the name of the year, 5774. And by saying this Tzirufim, we're connecting to the energy of this verse and asking it to change us so that we can manifest the essence of the verse, which is peace in the Middle East. Ovyobea lekaba vimaleu davye ovyobea lekaba vimaleu davye ovyobea lekaba. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper. Reading from the Zohar, from the section. The section of Ekev, section 4, which is titled, As for the likeness of their faces, they had the face of a man. And I'm reading verse 67. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maaseh adenu kumnei aleinu maaseh adenu kumneihu. Mikael Rashim Birshimu Listar Derom V'kol Andin Mitzachlin Ligabei Pnei Adam Pnei Aryeh Pnei Nesher Pnei Shor Adam Yehudikar V'nukva V'lait Karei Adam Bar Haki Umine Itzarin Ziyurin Tirakav Elohim Ribotayim Elfe Shinan. Michael made a mark to the south side and all three faces, the face of a lion, the face of an ox, and the face of an eagle, look toward the face of a man. A man is male and female, and is not called a man without them. From it, from the face of a man, all shapes were formed in the secret of the verse. The chariots of Elohim are twice 10,000, 10,000s upon thousands. The Hebrew word is Shinan, which is a verse in Psalms. The word Shinan is a Hebrew word that means thousands, or actually 10,000s, but it's a play on words in this verse, which is sounding similar to the idea of the face of a man. And the idea of the chariots of Elohim. We have to define what a chariot is. And for most people, it's something difficult to understand. Because a chariot is a human being. But that chariot, who is a human being, is channeling the upper worlds and the energy from the spiritual worlds. He's channeling that into the physical world. And he does this usually not conscious of it. And it's spoken that various people in the Bible became chariots, and they were chariots to a particular spiritual energy. Abraham was a chariot for Chesed. Isaac was a chariot for Gevurah. Jacob and Israel became a chariot for Tiferet. Aaron became a chariot for Netzach, or for Hod. And Moses initially was a chariot for Netzach, but then he became a chariot for this non-Sephiroth thought. And all of these spiritual terms in Sephiroth, we will start to study tonight. But the whole idea of a chariot is a human being who either consciously or unconsciously is drawing the energy of the spiritual world through himself. Just as I mentioned earlier in tonight's class, the basic class, that I don't really know what I'm saying, but you are drawing that energy through me when I teach. In that sense, I become a chariot of the energy of whatever I'm teaching. It's a desire that you have, and you use me as a chariot, as a channel, as a vehicle to bring that information to you. Does anybody have any questions?
There's a lot of background noise.
I'll change the controls so that it turns it off, I hope.
Okay.
I wasn't hearing the background noise, or I would have done it already. I hope that's better. I can't hear you if you're responding. In order to respond, you have to press star 6. The handout for tonight's class is located on the Revealed Wisdom section of the ESM website. By now, I would hope you know how to get to it, but just in case you don't, go to yeshem.com, and the red bar at the top has the words Revealed Wisdom. If you click on that, you go to a separate page. When you get to that page, scroll down to the matrix. I apologize to you. I believe the section we are talking about is in the third to the left, or the first column to the right, or the second column to the right. The name of the class is 10 Luminous Emanations. It may say 10 Luminous Emanations Series. It may say Rabbi Ashlag's 10 Luminous Emanations. But somewhere in that matrix, you will find the link. If you have difficulty, I'm going to tonight give you the link to the handout, and I'm going to do that now. But next week, I'll have a more accurate direction for you. I just left San Francisco without having remembered where the link was. The link is located at www.yeshem.com. /, and now we have three words, Kabbalah, K-A-B-B-A-L-A-H, a dash or a hyphen, the word Esser, E-S-S-E-R, a hyphen or a dash, and the word Sefirot, S-E-F-I-R-O-T, .htm. Kabbalah Esser Sefirot .htm, separated by hyphens. I'm starting to read from the handout. But before I read, I want to give you just a little bit more information that I wrote into the handout. The book Etz Chaim is the teachings of Rabbi Chaim Vital, who received those teachings from his teacher, the Arizal, Rabbi Isaac Luria. The Arizal told Rabbi Chaim Vital, and he recorded it in his writings elsewhere, that the way he taught it to him could not be understood by most people. The book, the Etz Chaim, is describing how the light from the endless world evolved down into the physical world. And I purposely use the word evolved because we normally do not think of this process as an evolution. But these kinds of processes are evolutionary. They're not revolutionary. They're step by step. Rabbi Ashlag, who was a Gilgul of the Ari, came into this life to restructure those writings from Rabbi Chaim Vital. And so he rearranged the writings into what is called the Esser Sefirot. Translation is the 10 Sefirot, the 10 levels of consciousness. The Kabbalah Center translated that as the 10 Luminous Emanations. but it's really not a direct translation. But it is an appropriate translation. It is talking about what are the Sephirot. But this book is the Etzayim in a different order. The Sephardic people, the Sephardic group of Jews, do not study Rabbi Ashlag. His background comes from the Ashkenazi side. And the Hasidic groups do not study from Rabbi Ashlag, although some of them are starting to change. But my teachers do study from him, and some of them that do not actually study from him without recording it, without revealing it to most of their students, because he is the foremost prophet. I am beginning to read, and I'm starting with my commentary. Rabbi Ashlag, who is a Gilgul, a reincarnation of the Arizal, took the writings of Rabbi Chaim Vital and reorganized them into an easier method of learning them. The result is the Sefer Esser Sefirot, the Book of the Ten Sefirot, the Book of the Ten Luminous Emanations. It's not really an easier method of learning them, but it is a method that allows the human being of the final generations to understand and utilize the tools of Kabbalah and the Sefirot and understand the process, the evolutionary process of how the endless world can come into the physical. This book, the Sefer Esser Sefirot, has 16 sections. He starts with the endless world, and the last section is the physical world. But it is not orderly world by world. It is different tools and different explanations and different evolutionary processes that we need to understand in order to utilize the book and the tools and the Sephirot. But these are many different levels, many different aspects that we learn step by step, but they apply to many of the worlds as well as step by step. And I will try and help you understand that as we go through this. We are starting with the introduction, which is referred to as the Hakdamot in Hebrew. It actually is considered the highest study of Kabbalah by itself. The Hakdamot, the foreword, the introduction, the preface, the Hakdamot is all of those things rolled into one and written by the author, Rabbi Ashlag. We are going to try to do justice to this study with the help of God. This is the first time I have taught the introduction, the Hakdamah. I have taught the Sefer Esser Sefirot before, but not with the introduction. And because the introduction is on a higher level, something we don't think of is an introduction. But the introduction is, in essence, a summary of the process. But it's concealed in stories and explanations. And it will take a little bit to bring that out. Number one, the first section of the Hakdamah. At the outset of my words, this is Rabbi Ashlag speaking. At the outset of my words, I find a great need to break an iron wall that has been separating us from the wisdom of Kabbalah since the ruin of the temple to this generation. It lies heavily upon us and arouses fear of being forgotten from Israel, Chas v'Shalom. However, when I begin to speak to anyone about this study, his first question is, why should I know how many angels are in the sky and what their names are? Can I not keep the whole Torah in all its details and intricacies without this knowledge? It's a reasonable question, isn't it? Do you need to study Kabbalah to get close to God? That's really the question. The excuse that the man is giving Rabbi Ashlag, many religious people give this excuse. I don't really need to know the names of the angels and all of these details. I can do the mitzvot without them. Second, he will ask, the sages have already determined that one must first fill one's belly with Mishnah and Gemara. Thus, how can one deceive himself that he has already completed the whole of the revealed Torah and lacks only the wisdom of the hidden? Another excuse that people give for not studying Kabbalah. Third, he is afraid that he will turn sour because of this engagement. This is because there have already been incidents of deviation from the path of Torah because of engagement in Kabbalah. Hence, why do I need this trouble? Who is so foolish as to place himself in danger for no reason? A third excuse to not study Kabbalah. Fourth, even those who favor this study permit it only to holy ones, servants of the Creator, and not all who wish to take the Lord may come and take. A fourth excuse for not studying Kabbalah. I'm not worthy. Only the holy ones can do so. The fifth, and most importantly, there is a conduct in our midst that when in doubt, keep this. Do as the people do. And my eyes see that all those who study Torah in my generation are of one mind and refrain from studying the hidden. Moreover, they advise those who ask them that it is undoubtedly preferable to study a page of Gemara instead of this engagement. This is also an excuse to not study Kabbalah. Since I don't really know what to do, I'm going to follow what my rabbi says. He says not to study it. Since I don't really know what to do, I'm going to follow what the general people do. And they don't study Kabbalah, they study Gemara. They study Mishnah. They study the Talmud. My commentary on section 1. Rabbi Ashlag is asking the question, why do people not study the hidden concealed Torah, but for the last 2,000 years since the destruction of the temple, study the Gemara and the Mishnah? The Mashiach has not come through this study. Rabbi Philip Berg suggests, why not try this study of the Kabbalah? Because the other method has not been successful. He jokingly says, would you bet on a losing horse for 2,000 years? For 2,000 years, Mashiach has not come. Therefore, the Jewish people have not been successful in what the prophets have told them will happen. Why are they still betting on this losing horse of the Gemara and the Mishnah? Rabbi Ashlag is giving the typical answers to the questions surrounding the study of the concealed Torah. He will eventually answer these questions and these blockages that people erect. we will notice, not yet of course, that Rabbi Ashlag uses a roundabout logical discourse to answer these blockages. Let us move on and start to address these subjects. Section 2. Indeed, if we set our hearts to answer but one very famous question, I am certain that all these questions and doubts will vanish from the horizon, and you will look upon their place to find them gone. This indignant question is a question that the whole world asks, namely, what is the meaning of my life? In other words, these numbered years of our life that cost us so heavily, with so much pain and torments, that we suffer for them, to complete them to the fullest, who is it who enjoys them? Or even more precisely, whom do I delight? Do I receive pleasure? No, I'm in pain. Do I give pleasure to the Creator? How can I give pleasure to the Creator if I'm in pain? This is the question, or the way that Rabbi Ashlag starts to explain that these excuses that people give are absurd. And he uses this simple question, what's the meaning of my life? We all, at one time or another during the course of our life, have asked that question. And the majority of the world does not arrive at an answer. I'm continuing to read. It is indeed true that the historians have grown weary contemplating it, and particularly in our generation. No one even wishes to consider it anymore. Yet the question stands as bitterly and as vehemently as ever. Sometimes it meets us uninvited, pecks at our minds, and humiliates us to the ground before we find the famous ploy of flowing mindlessly in the currents of life, as we have always done. My commentary on Section 2. The only true answer to the question, what is the meaning of my life, can only come from the study of Kabbalah, the concealed Torah. Rabbi Ashlag is telling us, if we ignore the objections, we will find the answer to this question, and also blow these objections away, since they all stem from the negative system. Rabbi Ashlag didn't say that specifically, but he hinted at it in Section 2. Section 3. Indeed, it is to resolve this great riddle that the verse writes, taste and see the Lord is good. Those who keep the Torah and the mitzvot correctly are the ones who taste the taste of life. They are the ones who see and testify that the Lord is good, as our sages have said, that he created the world to do good to his creations, since it is the conduct of the good to do good. Yet those who have not yet tasted the taste of life in keeping Torah and mitzvot cannot feel and understand that the Lord is good, as our sages say, that when the Creator created us, his sole purpose was to benefit us. Hence, we have no other counsel but to keep the Torah and the mitzvot correctly. It is written in the Torah, in the parashat of Nitzavim, see, I have set before thee this day life and good, and death and evil. This means that prior to the giving of the Torah, we had only death and evil before us. As our sages have said, the wicked in their lives are called dead. This is because their death is better than their lives. as the pain and suffering they endure for their sustenance is many times greater than the little pleasure they feel in this life. However, now we have been granted Torah and mitzvot, and by keeping it, we are rewarded with the real life, the joyful and delightful to its owner, as it is written, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." Hence the writing says, "See, I have set before thee this day life and good, which you did not have in reality at all prior to the giving of the Torah." I have to stop. I'll say it in my commentary. But it's such an overwhelming statement. It's such a strong teaching. We don't think about it. We've had the Torah for 2,000 years. We don't use it properly. Because for 2,000 years, actually for 3,300 years, we have not studied it from the inner, hidden, concealed levels. Ask a religious person, why do you lay tefillin? Why do you keep Shabbat? And his answer is, God commands it. Not every one of them, not everyone. But this answer, God commands it, is the same explanation as the five blockages for not reasons for not studying the hidden and the concealed Torah. Rabbi Ashlag comes and wipes it away. He says, "Taste and see that it is good." And he explains that tasting and good are Torah and mitzvot. When you do them properly, you receive life. And until you do them properly, you receive death, God forbid. As the sages said, as Rabbi Ashlag wrote again, that the evil people are considered dead, even though they walk around in life. This is the meaning of our first class. The world is an illusion. I looked at the students, and I haven't reached the level where I know this, that I've studied this inner level, where I've tasted and know that it's good. I have experienced the taste a few times. I know that it is good. But then I fall again, and I die, which is a euphemism. It's a code word. I'm still alive. Just look around. You hear my voice. I must be alive. But not really. And the writing ends, "Therefore choose life, that thou mayest live, thou and thy seed." There is a seemingly repeated statement here. Choose life that you may live. Yet it is a reference to life in keeping Torah and mitzvot, which is when there is real life. However, a life without Torah and mitzvot is harder than death. This is the meaning of the words of our sages. The wicked in their lives are called dead. The writing says that thou may live, thou and thy seed. It means that not only is a life without Torah joyless to its owner, but one also cannot delight others. One finds no contentment, even in one's children, one's progeny, since the life of his progeny is also harder than death. Hence, what gift does he leave for them? However, not only does one who lives in Torah and mitzvot enjoy his own life, but he is even happy to bear children and bequeath them this good life. This is the meaning of that thou mayest live, thou and thy seed, for he receives additional pleasure in the life of his children, of which he was the cause. There's a lot of secrets, a lot of revelation in that paragraph. My commentary. It has been 3,300 years since the Torah was given to the 70 nations. All 3,300 years, the definition of life has not been clear. The definition of good has not been clear. And clearly the definition of their opposite words has not been clear. Every religion in the world has not even touched upon what Rabbi Ashlag says so easily. Before the Torah, there was no life, and there was no good. Without the Torah and mitzvot, there is no good, and there is no life. Contemplate these statements and reread section 3. From this, one can get a glimpse for the first time of the greatness of Rabbi Ashlag, and also the importance in studying Torah and doing the mitzvot with the proper kavanah. Section 4. Now you can understand the words of our sages about the verse, therefore choose life. It states, I instruct you to choose the part of life as one who says to his son, choose for yourself a good part in my land. He places him on the good part and tells him, choose this for yourself. It is written about this, O Lord, the portion of mine inheritance and of my cup. Thou maintainest my lot. You placed my hand on the good fate to say, take this for yourself. The words are seemingly perplexing. The verse says, therefore choose life. Is anybody going to choose death? This means that one makes the choice by himself. However, they then say that he places him on the good part. Thus, is there no longer choice here? Moreover, they say that the Creator puts one's hands on the good fate. This is indeed perplexing, because if it is so, where then is one's choice? Now you can see the true meaning of their words. It is indeed true that if the Creator himself puts one's hands on the good fate by giving him a life of pleasure and contentment within the physical life that is filled with torment and pain and devoid of any content, one necessarily departs and escapes them when he sees a tranquil place. Even if it seemingly appears amidst the cracks, he flees there from his life. He flees there from this life, which is harder than death. Indeed, there is no greater placement of one's hand by him than this. And one's choice refers only to the strengthening. This is because there is certainly a great effort and exertion here before one purifies one's body to be able to keep the Torah and mitzvot correctly, not for his own pleasure, but to bring contentment to his maker. This is called by the Hebrew word lishma, for her name is a direct translation. It's usually translated for its own sake, not with an agenda, not to accomplish anything, not to get wealthy, not to get honor. For its own sake is the way it's translated. But the real meaning of the word lishma, for her name, You do the actions for her name. What is the name? You should know that. It's the Tetragrammaton. Only in this manner is one endowed with a life of happiness and pleasantness that come with keeping the Torah. However, before one comes to that purification, there is certainly a choice to strengthen in the good way by all sorts of means and tactics. Also, one should do whatever his hand finds the strength to do until he completes the work of purification and will not fall under this burden midway. Before I start my commentary on Section 5, there's a machloket, there's an argument. It's going on today. Should I study Torah for its own sake, for her name, and not earn a living, and require people who work to support me? Is that the correct thing to do? That's what Rabbi Ashlag is answering here and saying, no, do whatever you take, what it takes to strengthen your doing the mitzvot for its own sake, for her name. Do not ask for support from the community. Do not ask for help from other people. He's giving this answer. This is the same answer that the sages have given over and over and over. And even Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is reportedly to have said, if you're doing physical work, you're not doing your job. You're not doing the spiritual work. But elsewhere in this Zohar, it describes that doing physical work is an opportunity to bring spiritual work into that process. My commentary on Section 5. Most people have never read these words of the sages, and those who have read them have not understood them. We today do not keep the mitzvot lishma, as Rabbi Ashlag tells us. Yet God has given us some respite in the process of Gilgulim, of reincarnation. Some lives allow us to improve our process and walking the path towards the level of consciousness called Lishma. Are you in one of these respites? Are you striving to reach one of these respites? Actually, this is my commentary on Section 4. I apologize. Section 5. According to the above, you will understand the words of our sages in the Meshechet Avot. Thus is the path of Torah. Eat bread with salt. Drink little water. Sleep on the ground. Lead a sorrowful life. And labor in the Torah. If so, happy you will be. Happy in this world, and happy in the next world. We must ask about their words. How is the wisdom of Torah different from the other teachings in the world, which do not require asceticism and sorrowful life? Torah itself is enough to acquire those teachings. Even though we labor extensively in the Torah, it is still not enough to acquire the wisdom of the Torah, except through the mortification of bread with salt and a sorrowful life. What Rabbi Ashlag is saying, what the sages said is live a humble, poor, worthless existence. Don't strive to become wealthy. Now, that's not what Kabbalah teaches, but that's what the words of the sages imply. And Rabbi Ashlag is the end of the words is even more surprising. As they said, if so you do, happy you will be. Happy in this world and happy in the next world. This is because it is possible that I will be happy in the next world. But in this world, while I torment myself by eating and drinking and sleeping on the ground and lead a sorrowful life, would it be said about such a life, happy in this world? Is this the meaning of a happy life in this world? Meshechet Avot is the section of the Talmud called Perkei Avot, the ethics of the fathers. This is actually a mistranslation and a corruption of the depth of this section of the Talmud. People consider this the closest the Talmud comes to the teachings of the Zohar and the Kabbalah. Again, this is a corruption. The Perkei Avot means section of the fathers. The fathers are not teaching ethics and morals, since the Torah does not teach ethics and morals. To teach ethics and morals lowers the goal of humanity. The goal of humankind is to become divine, to become close to God, meaning to become like God. But which attribute of God? There are 10 races of angels created prior to man. Each of them has one attribute of God. Humankind has the potential to become all 10 attributes. This is what the fathers are teaching us in the Perkei Avot, that you can learn to live all 10 attributes of God. Until you do this, you are in the process. This process will take 49,000 years. We are just in the 12,000 plus of those years. I'm going to stop here for questions, because I know this is an area that you've not heard before. I'm going to open up the controls so you can ask questions. Does anybody have any questions about what I've read or what I've just said?
Bottom part now. Right here.
Too late?
No, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I'm not hearing it. I don't know if that's background conversation or if it's a question. I will assume then there's no questions, and I'll change the controls back, and I'll move on. To ask a question, you need to press star 6 now. Section 6. However, it is explained above that engagement in Torah and mitzvot correctly, in its strict condition, is to bestow contentment to one's maker and not for self-gratification. And this is impossible to achieve except through great labor and exertion in purifying the body. The first tactic is to accustom oneself to not receive anything for one's pleasure, even the permitted and necessary things for the existence of one's body, such as eating and drinking, sleeping, and other such necessities. Thus one will detach oneself completely from any pleasure that comes to him, even in the necessities, in the fulfillment of one's sustenance, until he leads a sorrowful life in his literal meaning. And after that, one becomes accustomed to that, and his body possesses no desire to receive any pleasure for itself. It is now possible for him to engage in the Torah and keep the mitzvot in that manner too, in order to bestow contentment upon his maker, and not at all for his own pleasure. When one acquires that, one is rewarded with tasting the happy life, filled with goodness and delight without any blemish of sorrow, which appears in the practice of Torah and mitzvot, lishma. It is as Rabbi Meir says in Avot 6, anyone who engages in Torah lishma is granted many things. Moreover, the whole world is rewarding to him. The secrets of the Torah are revealed to him, and he becomes as a flowing spring. It is about him that the verse says, taste and see the Lord is good. One who tastes the flavor of the practice of Torah and mitzvot lishma is endowed with seeing the intention of the creation by himself, which it is to do only good to his creations, and it is the conduct of the good to do good. Then he rejoices and delights in the number of years of life that the Creator has granted him, and the whole world is rewarding for him. It doesn't sound like it's really something that I want to do. It doesn't sound like the world is waiting for me, that the study of Kabbalah is going to benefit me. It sounds like it's going to hurt me. Rest assured that Rabbi Ashlag will clarify this. We may not get to it tonight, but it is not where he is going to leave us in this study. My commentary on section 6. The Kabbalists teach that we cannot control the world, only our reaction to what happens to us while we are in this world. Therefore, Rabbi Ashlag is not saying that we are not supposed to receive wealth or health or pleasure. In fact, we are supposed to receive this so that we can learn how to receive it properly, in a manner that gives contentment to our Maker. What is the concept of contentment to our Maker all about? I will tell you now, and know that you will not comprehend this at all. Your Maker is the vessel, since that is what made the agreement with the fulfillment in the endless world. The vessel said no more, and the fulfillment said, okay. That's what brought the agreement that created the separation in the vessel and created all of the human beings. You are the vessel, so you are the maker. What gives you contentment gives the maker contentment. What you desire is what the maker desires. This is contrary to the teachings of Western religions. This is part of the corruption of Eastern religions. Since religions are created by man prior to the completion of the 49,000 years. Here is a hint. Receiving pleasure is not contentment of the maker. Receiving pleasure is the purpose of the creation of the creatures. What is the meaning of contentment of the maker is a question not yet answered. looking to see if we have time to complete section 7, and we don't. So I'm going to stop here and ask you if you have any questions. I'm going to put the controls back. Now is the time to ask. You don't have to press star 6, just speak out. The announcements for this week, tomorrow night at 8:30 is our 20th class of Advanced Reincarnation. The earlier classes are all, most of them are available on the website. On Thursday night at 10 p.m. will be a Zohar class. Saturday night at 10 p.m. will be a Zohar class. 10:30 Sunday morning will be the first of our preparation classes for the holidays of the new year. The high holidays, are they are called. We're going to find out about the unity of these 22 days. It takes about 7, 8, sometimes 9 or 10 weeks. I hope you'll join us for that process. Any questions before I wish you good night? Have a beautiful, beautiful week.